"It is finished." Those were his words. It's over. It's done. It's like we were just getting started and then it's through. I had so many dreams of how this was going to go, and this wasn't it. He can't be gone. It can't be over. It is finished. Said it himself. "My God, why have you forsaken me?" Forsaken, abandoned, deserted, alone, defeated. That's how I feel, defeated. He said we would win. He said God was unstoppable. He said the kingdom was unstoppable. But it's over. It's done. It is finished.
A couple of years ago, being in a cemetery a lot like this, and I was performing a funeral for a young man who was in his 30s who was taken from this world way too soon. You know, as a pastor, I'm often brought into some of the darkest moments that families experience together, and that day was no exception. And particularly, it was really difficult to grieve alongside this man's mother. I mean, I don't care how old you are. No parent imagines having to bury their own child. And yet here we were, and we were placing these bright red roses on the coffin that her son was lying in as it was being lowered into the ground. And this mom was just beside herself. It was a really, really hard moment to be a part of. And I was grieving alongside the family. And the really strange thing was that this funeral took place on Holy Saturday. It's that day in between Good Friday and Easter. You know, the day that Jesus was lying in a tomb. And it's hard to describe the way I felt that day, because I was being present with the family and I was mourning with them and grieving with them. But on this weekend that we celebrate the absolute hope that we find in Jesus and his resurrection. And I was doing my best to share that hope with this family. But I don't know that they were seeing any hope in the situation that weekend. It seemed that the only thing they could see was the very present reality of death. Now, I think back to that first Easter weekend, and I think we forget that Easter Sunday actually began in a graveyard. See, Jesus had been put in a tomb. And I think the disciples that weekend felt very similar to this family that I was with that day. See, these followers of Jesus, they had given over 2 years of their lives to the ministry of this obscure young rabbi who came out of nowhere, but claimed that he was the one, the Messiah that they had all been waiting for. And now he was dead. I mean, could you imagine what that would feel like? This man who we all thought came to be the hero to save us was now lying in a tomb. I mean, how would you feel? Would you feel foolish for having followed this man? Would you feel angry? Would you feel scared or sad or hurt or confused? Well, the disciples were feeling all of that and more. And actually, they all went into hiding because as his followers, they believed that the same fate awaited them, being crucified on a cross. Now, to be honest, I don't know that I would have responded any differently than those disciples. We've all had those moments in life where the rug gets pulled out from underneath us, and all of a sudden it feels like nothing makes sense anymore. And I believe that that's where those disciples were that weekend. But Jesus had actually tried to prepare them for that day. He had told them again and again and again that he would have to die and that he would be raised to life. And he told them again and again and again, but it just didn't seem to click for them. See, the Apostle Paul or the Apostle John recorded in the book of John, chapter 12, that Jesus had said, "The hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Very truly I tell you, unless a kernel of wheat falls to the ground and dies, it remains only a single seed. But if it dies, it produces many seeds." I mean, that concept makes sense, right? That a seed only brings forth new life once it's been buried in the ground and it dies. Only then will new growth spring forth from it. So Jesus was saying that even in our understanding of agriculture and biology is hidden the secrets of the resurrection. So Jesus was trying to tell them that he would have to die so that they could live, but that he would be raised to life. And yet for them, they believed that Jesus was dead and that he was never coming back. So imagine being there that first Easter Sunday, that first Resurrection Sunday. Mary had come to the tomb of Jesus so that she could mourn and grieve the loss of this man. And yet she comes to the tomb and instead she finds angels. And the tomb is empty. And they say, you know, why are you looking for him here? He's no longer here. He's not dead. He is risen. I mean, imagine hearing that news. And then Mary went to go share that news with others. I mean, we can see why the disciple Thomas demanded to see proof. He actually wanted to see and touch and feel the body of Jesus. Because that would be pretty unbelievable news to hear. That Jesus had risen from the dead. This would mean that not even death could hold him. And that anybody who follows him doesn't have to fear death, but instead will receive everlasting life. That not even the grave could hold back this man. That's pretty unbelievable news. But they came to believe it. See, that was the day that the world learned that Jesus is an unstoppable God. That no matter what anyone does to him, that there is nothing and no one who can stop him. And see, even though Jesus cannot be stopped, they keep on trying to stop Jesus. Or as the theologian John Bloom puts it, over and over, people keep trying to bury Jesus, but he refuses to stay dead. See, the scriptures tell us that we, as his church, are the body of Christ. We're his hands and his feet, the people who are carrying on his work in this world. And so the truth is that every time the world tries to stop the work of the church, they're actually trying to stop Jesus. But we know that he cannot be stopped. And yet throughout the history of the church, there have been people who are followers of Christ that have been persecuted. It was Tertullian who wrote, "The blood of the martyrs is the seed of the church." Now that's an intense saying, but it actually brings us back to what Jesus had said to his disciples, that a seed actually has to die before it can bring forth new life. So Jesus was really the first martyr of the church who willingly gave his life, that he died so that others could live. And that throughout the history of the church, there have been many who have done the same thing. You know, Paul, when he was writing to the Ephesians, he told them that the same power that rose Jesus from the dead now lives inside of us. So by sending his Holy Spirit, Jesus has equipped us to be his people, doing his work in this world. And so there have been many times that through the persecution of the church, there's actually been great movement and great growth. And so as believers, we actually understand that we don't need to fear death. See, for us, death isn't this period that's put on the end of the sentence of our lives. But instead, we understand that it's really a comma, this necessary moment between this part of our lives and the rest of eternity. Lately, I've been reading this book called Life Together. It's by a man named Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Isn't that a great name? And Bonhoeffer was a pastor in Germany during the rise of the Nazi Party. Now, there's this moment where he actually had the chance to get out of Germany and continue to do some really great ministry work somewhere else in the world. At that same time, he was invited to join this underground movement of believers who were resisting the Nazi Party. Now, Bonhoeffer was famous for saying that Jesus calls a man to follow him and come and die. And so Bonhoeffer understood that following Jesus meant a daily sense of dying to ourselves, but being faithful to his call to the very point of death, because only then could we join in his resurrection life. And so Bonhoeffer stayed in Germany at the risk of life and limb. And he was part of these resistance efforts to the point that he actually supported and helped an assassination attempt on Adolf Hitler's life. Now, this resulted in him winding up in a prison work camp. Now, I want you to hear what one of the fellow prisoners wrote about Bonhoeffer's time in the camp. He said, "Bonhoeffer always seemed to me to spread an atmosphere of happiness and joy over the least incident, and profound gratitude for the mere fact that he was alive. He was one of the very few persons I have ever met for whom God was real and always near. On Sunday, April 8th, 1945, Pastor Bonhoeffer conducted a little service of worship and spoke to us in a way that went to the heart of all of us. He had hardly ended his last prayer with us when the door opened and two civilians entered. They said, 'Prisoner Bonhoeffer, come with us.' Now that had only one meaning to all of us prisoners: the gallows. So we said our goodbyes to him, and he took me aside and he said, 'Brother, this is the end, but for me, it is the beginning of life.' The next day, Bonhoeffer was executed by the Nazis." Now, I want to ask you a question. What has lasted? The work of the church, this movement that Bonhoeffer was a part of, or the Third Reich that was built by the Nazi regime? See, this engine of evil that Hitler had created, it came crumbling down. And yet the work of the church around the globe continues to this very day. The thing that Bonhoeffer had given his life for continues to call people into life and freedom and hope and goodness and the very love of God. There has been no totalitarian regime, no crisis, no wave of persecution that has succeeded in stomping the church out. If anything, often the church finds new life and new growth and shares more hope with more people as a result of these efforts to end the movement of the church. See, Jesus said that he would build his church and the gates of hell would not be able to stand against it. What that means is that Jesus is the one responsible for gathering his people, for equipping his people, for sending them out to do his work in this world. And that even the most powerful expressions of evil that we can imagine, even when it seems like darkness has won the day, that the very gates of hell cannot stand against this thing that Jesus is building. That Jesus is an unstoppable God, and he is building an unstoppable church. Now, there are moments in life that we need to know that. I can think of multiple moments in my life where I needed to understand that Jesus was an unstoppable God and that this thing that he had invited me into was unstoppable, that it would never end. And right now, we're all in the midst of this collective sense of stress, that there is a worldwide pandemic that we are all experiencing together. Entire companies seem to have shut down overnight. Society seems to have come to a grinding halt. Fears of sickness and death loom in the back of many people's minds. And it's at times like this that we're reminded that so much in our life can seem to stop in a moment. It's times like this where we can feel disoriented. And yet it's also times like this that we need to be reminded that we serve and follow an unstoppable God and that he is building an unstoppable movement called the church. I love how the author of Hebrews talks about this thing that we have been called to be a part of. In Hebrews 12:28, he says, "Therefore, since we are receiving a kingdom that cannot be shaken, an unshakable kingdom, let us be filled with gratitude and so worship God acceptably with reverence and awe." He calls it unshakable kingdom. I love this. It's this unshakable kingdom, this unstoppable church, this everlasting family that Jesus has called us all to be a part of. And that if that's the case, that there is a response that we should have. So what is the author of Hebrews tells us? He says that because of this truth, because of this news that we're hearing, that we should be responding with gratitude. We should be responding with worship. We should be responding with reverence and with awe. And so what would that look like for you in this season? Like, what would it look like for you in this season to respond with gratitude? What would it look like in this season to respond with worship and with reverence and with awe? I believe that some of us are being called into a season, we're being led into a season of deeper intimacy with God. Like to know God more, to be closer to him, to be filled with gratitude for who he is and all the things that he's doing in our lives, and to actually to worship him more and more and more, that we've got this opportunity to lean into a season of drawing closer to God. I believe that some of us are being called into a season of reverence, that we would honor God with our lives, that some of us actually have to admit that there's things in our lives, you know, the way that we think, the way that we treat and talk to others, the way that we spend our time, that there are things in our lives that actually don't honor God very well and they need to go. that for some of us, he's actually calling us into a season of having to admit, you know what, Jesus, I don't think I've actually treated you as my king very much in the daily workings of my life. And that he's actually refining us in this season. He's showing us the areas that don't honor him. And he's actually asking us to remove those things. And he's giving us the power to do so. So I believe some of us are being called into a season of reverence and honoring who he is. And even for others of us, we're being called into a season of standing in awe. You know, I remember the time in my life where I first heard this news that Jesus was this unstoppable God, that not even the grave could hold him, that he had conquered sin, death, and the grave so that I could experience freedom, that I could have hope forevermore. And not only that, but that he was calling me into his family, that I didn't deserve a seat at his table, but that he had reserved one for me anyway, that he loved me, and he had this place in his family for me, and that he was calling me to be a part of it for the rest of eternity. And I was 15 years old at the time, and I remember at that time, it seemed like everything was going wrong. I had very little hope for anything. And then I heard this news, and I just remember being in awe of who God is, being in awe of his plan and what he had called me into. And I remember just having this response of saying, Jesus, I want to follow you for the rest of my life. It was like I drew a line in the sand and I said, from here on, I follow Jesus to the very last breath that I breathe. And then beyond that, for all of eternity, I want to be with him. I want his life. I want what he has for me. And for some of you, maybe this would be the first time that you would ever put your hope and your faith and your trust in Jesus. But maybe that is your response to this news today, that you would draw that line in the sand, that you would stand in awe of who he is, and you would say, Jesus, from here on out, I want to follow you. So whatever response you might have today, wherever you might be, as you hear this news, as you feel the Holy Spirit working in your heart, may you know the resurrection power that raised Jesus from the dead can now live inside of you. May you know that this Jesus is an unstoppable God, that he conquered sin, death, and the grave, that he conquered hell itself so that you could know life. May you know that Jesus is building an unstoppable church, this movement that will carry humanity to the very climax of history, Jesus returning to establish his earthly kingdom. And may you know that he has a place for you in that kingdom. May you know that he has a place for you in his family. May you know this love of God that cannot be stopped. And may you be filled with hope and gratitude and worship and reverence and awe in light of who he is. And may we remember that the very gates of hell cannot stand against Jesus and the work that he is doing. And may we be filled with wonder.
I had it all wrong. The cross wasn't the end, it was the beginning. The love that Christ showed us in that moment was enough. It sealed the deal. It wiped the slate. It gave my life hope. It made a way. It cleared a path that leads to everlasting life. It freed me from my own trap. It broke the chains. It made everything new. It hit the restart button. So let us lift up our voices to our Redeemer, our cornerstone, our foundation, our Avenger, our Creator, our Upholder, our Rescuer, our Liberator, our Counselor, our Restorer, our Strength, our Life, our Rock, our Healer, our Father, our Advocate, our Teacher, our Promoter, our Promise Keeper, our Encourager, our Rescuer, our Deliverer, our Light, our shelter, our forgiver, our giver, our helper, our comforter, our guide, our refuge, our shield, and our friend. Today, as we celebrate Easter Sunday, we stand here as servants of the unstoppable King, secure in the promise that He was right all along. The gates of hell will not prevail. There's nothing on this earth or the heavens that can stop His plan for man. No sin, no choices, no death, no disease, no virus that is more powerful than our unstoppable God. No weapon formed on earth or hell below can stop the plan of redemption that He has for this world. They keep trying to bury Jesus, but He keeps coming back. He has overcome. He is alive. He is unstoppable.